Welcome to Justice Studio Sessions. I am Marianne Moore, foundress of Justice Studio. During these sessions, we will be exploring the social justice themes that have emerged through Justice Studio's work, showcase grassroots activism, and deep dive into ethical and equitable research and consultancy methods. Stay tuned to learn more about the complexities of social justice and how you can turn your passion into action. Hello, dear listeners. In this episode, we are going to be talking about young people in Wessex. Wessex is an area in the southwest of England. And we are going to be talking to a really wonderful guest who Justice Studio knows very well. Claire Hobbs is the manager and creator of the Wessex Dance Academy, which is an initiative which re-engages excluded young people through the medium of dance. She set up this amazing academy in 2009 within the county of Hampshire, which is in the southwest of England. The young people who are referred to the academy are either excluded from or not attending school. They can be care leavers or those with experience of the criminal justice system. Justice Studio has been lucky enough to work with the academy twice. First in 2013, when we undertook an outcome study, and then again in 2020 as the pandemic broke, where we did a refresh to understand what had happened since we were last there. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Claire. Let's get stuck in. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Marianne.
It's lovely to see you.
Nice to see you too.
Where are you calling in from today?
I'm calling in from my loft here in Winchester, and it feels quite peaceful and it's quite blustery outside, so I'm pleased to be in the warm.
That's very good. Yeah. No, it's very exciting to have you. We go back a while now, don't we? Because, oh my goodness, the project I did for you was in 2013, I think.
That's over 10 years ago. How can that be?
Yeah, it was over 10 years ago. And then we've worked with you subsequently as well. But it's nice to see you again. And I'm excited to talk about young people in Hampshire and the work that you do with them through the Wessex Dance Academy. It would be great if you could just maybe give a bit of an introduction to yourself in your own words so that the listeners know who you are.
Oh, thank you, Marianne. Well, it's really nice to be invited to be part of this. Yeah, I'm Claire and I am the manager of a project, a really special project in Hampshire, which is really unique, called the Wessex Dance Academy. And it was set up now over 10 years ago, about in 2009, I think our first pilot project was. And yeah, and I've had the pleasure to be the sort of leader of the ship, if you like, over the last 15 years. And yeah, and get to meet an amazing amount of brave, talented young people and people that work with them and support them through their journeys, including people like you, Marianne, and your team.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed working with you over the years. And Wessex Dance Academy is a pretty unique initiative in the UK at the moment, isn't it? It would be great if you could tell us a bit about your background before you set up Wessex Dance Academy and just kind of show how did that kind of idea emerge from the work that you were doing before?
Yeah, sure. So prior to the academy, I was working for the County Council, and I have done all my working life, actually. I've been really fortunate to have a really amazing career with local government. And I was a youth arts officer for Hampshire, and we were working with our partners across the county and a lot with children's services, obviously. I really believed, it's always been my passion, that all young people should have access to high quality arts activities. And I was really aware in my own upbringing and sort of graduating from university, it occurred to me that not everybody does have that access. And particularly I did some work in some prisons when I left university, and I was just amazed that people didn't realise that if they were at a performance, they had to be quiet, and if they were a member of the audience, that they listened. And it just really, I was just really naive, Marianne. I just had been brought up in a leafy little village in Hampshire, thinking that everybody had access to, or everybody had parents perhaps who took them to dance classes or to piano lessons. And it really changed everything for me, really. So as soon as I finished that little project, I came home back to Hampshire and was lucky enough to apply for a job which worked with young people on a big estate, council estate in Basingstoke. And I set about trying to bring as much wonderful arts experiences to those young people who weren't ever going to access it. Mm-hmm. And so from there, my sort of career grew over, well, it's been 28 years now since I've worked with young people using arts projects in Hampshire. And some of those young people are now professionals that I work with as well, which is really amazing. And yeah, and so it was about 17 years ago, the Arts Council put some money, partnered up with the Youth Justice Board and put some money to work with doing lots of different types of arts projects, lots of prevention projects. And so in Hampshire, we applied to get some money for the youth offending team, mm-hmm. to get a worker to do some project arts projects with those young people that were in the youth justice system. And one of the other projects that they funded was this dance project in Bradford and Leeds called Dance United. And they were doing amazing work with the youth justice system in Leeds and Bradford. And I was invited up there to go and see it, and I was absolutely blown away. It was incredible. It was awe-inspiring. And yeah, came back to Hampshire, knocked on the door of our head of children's services and said, if we really want to change our lives, of the lives of our vulnerable young people here, then there's this amazing project that we really should be inspired by. And he said, I'll take a punt on you. So we had a pilot in Hampshire in 2009, and it was incredible. And then we got started. And it was during that pilot, we had some really high tariff young people who, you know, whose lives had been really disrupted and taken off the rails by, you know, by the opportunities that they weren't offered. And we were really successful with those young people. And I think it was on the back of those early wins that people realised actually the transformative power that the arts can have on really, really changing the lives of those young people. And here we are 15 years later, hoping to do the same thing to the young people that we've got right now and the young people that we will get referred in the future.
Fantastic. Yeah, I remember I was actually working with Bradford Yacht for a while through one of the organisations that I worked for before setting up Justice Studio. And I remember coming across Dance United and thinking that it was this really, really cool initiative. And yeah, and it's then great to see it, that fantastic idea as well, then flourishing in Hampshire with you and through the youth offending team, because it is so important. Like, was it any particular arts? I mean, for you, is it all arts that you think is important for young people, or that you particularly are passionate about, or was it dance in particular? Or,
oh, I have to be biased. I really believe that that, and people could argue for everything, and I've been asked this question lots and lots of times, but for me the power of dance, and I'm not a dancer, may I let everybody know, I'm certainly not a dancer, it's the, for our young people, so we, Dance United, work mainly with young people in the youth justice system. Here in Hampshire, we work with young people that are on the edge of care, that aren't attending school, so the whole gamut of vulnerable young people, not just those within the youth justice system. So a lot of young people who can't stand still, whose lives are so chaotic, they find it hard to be still and to find peace. And for me, dance, the movement of dance is amazing, but actually it's also the stillness that it brings to our young people's lives, to be calm and to be still and to work as a team, as a company, to be able to touch and receive touch in a positive way, a way to be able to learn by using their bodies, not having to read or write anything, to be able to form relationships with those people around them, to be able to trust and you know, and that obviously happens in orchestras and lots of other forms of art, but dance and the moment of performance, that stepping onto stage, that having to believe in yourself, trust in yourself, and that sense of achievement afterwards, you know, for me, it's and it's doing something that they've never done before. A lot of our young people, they often think of dance as, I don't know, street dance or breaking or popping, but you know, this is contemporary dance that we use. It's really special and it's really unusual, and people don't expect to see the young people that we work with performing with such grace and beauty on stage, and it's the response that you get from that brings it all to life at the end.
When you talk about dance, it is really evocative, and you can just imagine it, and it feels really, really powerful. I'm just wondering, I know you said you're not a dancer, but do you have a kind of early moment when you first encountered it, or was there a particular time when you remember experiencing dance on stage or doing it or something that's really stick with you?
I mean, I would have loved to have been a dancer. It would have been my dream to have been a dancer. And I took classes when I was young, but I wasn't, I'm not very competitive. And so I think once you, as you get older, dancing can become a little bit competitive. And so it was never for me, but I think if I could write to my 16-year-old self, I'd say, don't give up. And so for me, I'm blessed to be able to work within dance and to be able to work with amazing young dancers and dance artists who I hugely admire and hugely wish I could move like.
that's lovely. So could you tell us a bit about your motivations for setting up the Wessex Dance Academy? What were you kind of hoping to achieve when you established it?
I think for me, having sort of done many, many arts projects with young people over the years, what struck me about the programme was its integrity and its longevity, and it was about having a lengthy amount of time to be able to work with these young people. So rather than doing it once a week, it provided an opportunity to work intensely with young people over a significant amount of time, really. And we sort of talk about it sometimes as a pause, you know, being able to, for young people to pause their world and step out of it and step into a studio and to do something else. And I think that the thought of being able to work with young people for a long enough amount of time to be able to make a difference, because it's very hard to demonstrate difference using the arts, and especially with young people, but to find a project that needed commitment, both from the authority that were funding it and from partners who were referring young people, but mainly from the young people that were making a commitment to doing something that we could therefore potentially, and this is where, you know, the work that you did with us, Marianne, came in really helpful, be able to actually demonstrate that it was making a difference. And that's what set my passion going, really, was that, you know, how can the arts demonstrate how can we show impact that the arts have on increasing the educational attainment of our young people in care, you know, making their placements more stable, reducing reoffending rates and engaging young people back into education. You know, if the arts can demonstrate that, that's really powerful. That's a really, really powerful message that we can't lose. And so I've been blessed to be able to work with those young people to secure their longer term placements with foster carers, to see young people not reoffend, to see young people go on and have amazing careers, earn much more money than I do, you know, and be inspired to see that they can change, and they do that themselves, that by participating. It's nothing that, you know, we provide the space, we provide the love, we provide the care, we provide the artists, but actually we can't move them. They have to move their own bodies and they have to buy into it. So it's like, it's real life. It's a real life. We're all in it. It's a real life project, and we all change throughout each one. Each one's unique and each one's different, and we all step in it together. And that's what's exciting to have the basis of a substantial, exciting project, and each time receive a new group of young people that go through it and change its shape.
Yeah, that's so cool. I remember when we first met and we were discussing about what would be useful, because we obviously did an evaluation of your programme and particularly looking at outcomes. And I remember one of the things that you said to me was that you wanted to be able to capture some of the things that other kind of more quantitative things don't capture, or kind of like statistical things don't capture. You obviously wanted to capture reducing reoffending and things like that, and placements and all of these things that the authorities like to see. But there was also this sense that the smaller outcomes, like seeing a young person change in their posture, kind of come and start smiling, start talking when they maybe hadn't been talking, and all of these much more difficult to measure types of outcomes that you wanted to reflect in the evaluation. And that was one of the really exciting things about the work, because we wanted to make sure that we could capture these small things and make it not just about those kind of headline grabbing for institutions outcomes, but really what difference was it making in the young people's lives. So that was a really interesting challenge about this project, which has stayed with me and has really been useful for other projects going forward as well. It's been really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important. I think, you know, I think you can have all of that quantitative data, but actually it's the stories that bring things to life. It's those stories that people go, oh, wow. And it's those headlines are important. You know, it is important that our children have stable lives. It is important that our children can access and feel confident within education and learning environments. But actually, it's equally important to be able to say please or thank you, or like you say, stand up straight, or be able to talk to somebody that they don't know. You know, those skills are really crucial in order to be able to live a life with confidence, to be part of a society that generally has to get on together, you know. So as you well know, food is a huge part of what we do, and eating together and allowing young people to enjoy or experience healthier food and things like that. Those things, I remember actually from your second report, I think it was, one young person who'd had a baby, and I think she said something like she knew how to feed her child, or she knew what was healthy for her daughter. She really cared about providing nice meals for her daughter. You know, that sticks with me, and that makes me happy to think of things like that when times are tough with young people, to think that, you know, that's what people take away. And if that's what people take away, then brilliant.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And that's the thing, as you said before, when you were talking about how you started out in this thing, just I think the majority of people who haven't experienced hardship and don't come from a background which is more difficult, and such backgrounds as these young people come from, will take these things for granted. They'll have no idea that certain people don't know how to use knife or fork, or, you know, or do some kind of basic self-care activities. And so it's really, really, really important to acknowledge this. I think it would be really worth, really useful to give a bit of an overview, in fact, around who these young people are, because obviously, well, there is this terminology called NEET, which is NEET, which is commonly used within our system. And it basically means children who are not in school or education or training, and it's been shortened to NEET. And so this group of NEET young people were very much part of your cohort, weren't they? But also children who've been excluded from school, involved in the care system, as you said, and also involved in the criminal justice system. It would be good, I think, just to get a sense of what is it like for these children? What kind of backgrounds are these children coming from, and what challenges do these young people face?
Over the years, we've seen a whole range of young people, and you're right, described as NEET, described as vulnerable, lots of labels we place on our young people these days, and those labels seem to increase month on month. We see a range of young people come to the academy, and they come for various reasons, and for each reason, you know, each reason is as upsetting as any. We see more and more poverty amongst the young people that we get, whether they're in care, in foster care, whether they're on the edge of care, whether they've been excluded from school. Young people who have just really have really made not great decisions, but often because of the environment that they are in, often because of the challenges that they face, often because of the lack of support that is around them, that means that they are unable to engage predominantly in education. That's where our young people, you know, that's what we have for our young people to engage in if they're under 16. And the majority of our young people are young people who aren't, like you say, in education. And for those reasons, usually are because their lives are really chaotic, because they've been moved around, if they're in the care system, if they're just refusing to go to school, which we see more and more of, especially since the pandemic. And we do have young people that come from amazingly caring backgrounds as well, for whom have lovely families where things just haven't worked out for them. But on the whole, we see young people coming from poverty and coming from chaos and coming from really small communities where they don't get out from, and it's hard to move on from. But I should say also, it's the young people we get, it's up to them to decide to come. You know, this is a voluntary thing. This isn't something that they have to attend. And that's really important that they own that, whoever they are, wherever they're from, that we enable them to understand the ownership of their journey before they actually come and take part in a programme with us. And because that then starts to build on them as an individual, and that's who we concentrate on. And to not rebuild them, but help them become the person that they could be, given some food, given some warmth, given some direction, given them a learning environment, and given them some sort of positive praise and acknowledgement, and being in a all sort of round caring environment really at the academy. So yeah, so I would find it really hard to just pinpoint one group, but there are lots of young people that come to us, and some of them are in school, to be fair. Some of them, you know, we do get referrals from schools, who some schools realize that actually if this young person was just given a little bit of time out, that things might be a bit easier for when they come back. So you know, Hampshire, you know, has been amazingly supportive in that, and some schools really see the benefit of that young person just having a little respite for 12 weeks, just leaving their area and coming, you know, to Winchester to do something a little bit different, and then returning with a much more positive outlook on life and, you know, an attack on what they're able to go forward and do.
Yeah, how you're describing it does make me think of the Wessex Dance Academy as a bit of an oasis amongst other kinds of networks and services and expectations and, as you say, labelling and this kind of stuff. I mean, there is obviously a kind of an institutional support mechanism for young people. There's the youth justice system, social services, and housing authorities and things like that. But you're kind of something different from them. Can you just maybe give us a bit of a overview of the lattice of different things that's going on and where the academy sits in that?
Yeah, so the academy is a temporary placement. So we sit within children's services. We are an alternative provision. Our programme is very much about being practical, about, we do a qualification, actually, I should mention that while they're with us, which is an open college network qualification, which is really important to our young people because, you know, certificates are something that they don't get often, and all of that sort of, all of that qualification is supported. So it's a provision that is for 15 to 25 year olds who live in Hampshire, or who are placed in Hampshire, or who are placed outside of Hampshire but are what we call Hampshire children. So we sit within, you know, we don't just work with young people that are school age, we work with post-16s as well, and you know, those post-16 young people, you know, have really, really, we can really work well with, because actually we can be with them at a point in their lives where they really need that sort of support. So yeah, so we are part of Hampshire County Council, and very proud to be.
It'd be great, I think, just to understand more about the programme itself. So it's effectively a term, isn't it? A school term. Yeah. And you follow the school term kind of guidelines, or, you know, timescales. So could you talk us through kind of what happens in each week? Because you take them on a bit of a journey, don't you?
We do. So yeah, so we work within, so we work three times. We have three cohorts a year, and they sit within each school term. So they are slightly shorter than the school term. And that's for various different reasons. And we, so that we have a little bit of lead in time when the schools identify the young people. If they've not already identified them the previous term, then we've got a little bit of a lead in during that first part of that term. So they come to us, and we start off very easy. I say very easy. We start off with young people just coming in the building. It's really important that they come and see the environment and they meet us. We're only a small team. We work with small groups of, you know, a small group of young people. It's very hard for people to comprehend what a dance space, dance studio is. So it's really nice to get the young people into the space to be able to see, oh yeah, okay, this is it. It's not like school. It's not like college. This is a big, beautiful studio, and there's a few little rooms around the outside. So we start with them coming in.
It is actually an amazing studio as well. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's like an old ballroom or something now.
Yeah, it's an old, don't ask me too much about the history. I should have joined up on that. Yeah, it's an old assembly room. And by all accounts, Jane Austen would go and dance in there. And I mean, it's a glorious, huge, double-heighted room with chandeliers and windows all down one side. It's absolutely beautiful. A lot of the young people sort of say, oh, it's like David Beckham's house, or it's like coming out of Frodo. It is a beautiful room, and that's really important. I'm going off subject, but that's really important because, you know, it's really important for us that our space and the environment is really, you know, is really nice, so that the young people, it's, you know, we respect them. It's not a, you know, everything is just welcoming and different and unusual for them, and clean and inspiring, and, you know, and looks, feels like a nice place to be. Yeah, so they come for the first week and it's just, they just do like an hour on the first day. The dance artists know nothing about our young people, so they're treated like a dance company straight away. They hand their phones in, they give in their belongings, and they don't get their phones back until lunchtime after we've eaten, and then they give them back in again at the end of the day, after lunch, sorry. And yeah, so we start off with like what we call taster sessions, but they're not really taster sessions, they're just sessions that grow. A lot of our young people haven't been out of their rooms for a long time, their fitness levels are really low, their stamina is really low, so it's important that we begin softly and we get them moving gently, and then so we do that for a week and then we start on full days. And for the first 3 weeks they are taught a piece of choreography that's already been made, so our dance artists will have created something specifically for that group, and they then perform that at the studio after 3 weeks. And one of the reasons we do that is because it's important to get them to trust us, and to do that we hold them really carefully and teach them really carefully, and we totally understand that these young people haven't been in a learning environment or have danced before. So it's really important that our message and our teaching is really clear, and that when we say we're going to do this at the end of 3 weeks, when we do it, it's like we told you we would do this and we've done it. So after that 3 weeks are like this, oh yeah, that was great, we have done it. And that is when everybody sort of gets it, when it comes together, and when people, families or social workers or any professional supporting the young people come to see that, they also go, oh my goodness me, that wasn't what I was expecting. I mean, you've been to a performance, it's not what people expect. It's very, very graceful and very moving and requires a lot of hard work. So once we've done the 3 week project, we feel like we've probably got them, and we often refer to seeing them, because that usually backs up onto half term. So when we see them after half term and we start working with them again, you sort of see them open, you sort of see their faces physically open, and you sort of think, right, okay, now we've taken that step, now they believe us a little bit, so we can move on. So we go on to learning a new piece, which is a little bit more advanced. Sometimes we have a guest choreographer come in to teach. They also make a piece themselves with the help of the dance artist, and they have, like I say, they can choose some costumes and they can choose the music, and I say choose under that we have some ideas that they can choose from. And we also go into a school, which is a really fun part actually. We go and teach in a primary school where, for whom a lot of them, you know, this is a really stressful environment going into a school, but a lot of them are like 15, 16 and we're teaching 6 and 7 year olds, so they sort of tower over them, and they learn to deliver a workshop based on the choreography from their 3 week performance. So that's always a really special moment in the cohort when they, you know, go into school and they have the attention of 38 year olds. Yeah, it's really lovely.
Have to teach the eight year olds, so they then have the responsibility of being a teacher.
Yeah, so they take it in turns to deliver an hours long workshop. So one of them will teach one exercise, one of them will teach another exercise, then one of them may demonstrate something of the choreography, and at the end the pupils of the school come up with a tiny little 5 second thing to share with the rest of them. But yeah, it's a brilliant moment. It's really lovely, and we're really lucky to have this amazing school in Andover who host us every term. Yeah, it's great. So anyway, those are the three main bits, bulks of that second part of the program, and then they perform at the end in front of maybe 200 or 300 people. So they perform the piece that they did at the beginning, which is the 3 week piece, the taught piece, which is the more advanced piece, and the piece that they've made themselves. But during all of that, we have fitness classes to increase their fitness levels, and we have yoga to increase their flexibility and get them thinking about their breathing and mindfulness. So it's very much a participatory project that just keeps moving.
It's so amazing, and yeah, as you said, I've seen some of the performances and they are really, really impressive. They're like incredibly professional. You would not know that these young people had learned what they perform in such a short amount of time. Like, it's really, really, really good. I'd be interested to know as well more about kind of the team behind it, because you have your dance artists and then you have a whole professional team around you. What's the qualifications of the dance? I mean, are they dancers themselves? Do they do other things, or how's the team structured?
So we're a very small team. So there's myself, and I am classed as the manager, but we all empty the bins. So there's myself and my colleague Lorna, who is the coordinator of everything, of us all. So we're permanent members of staff. We have a permanent dance artist role, which is our lead dance artist role. That's actually split into two part-time posts. So we have three actual members of staff, and then we employ freelance dance artists to come and deliver on each cohort. So there's three dance artists in the studio at all times. And they are really special people who have trained in contemporary dance, have experience working with young people. It's really important that those dancers, and they're generous, amazing, you know, men and women who come and teach with us, the skills that you need to have to deliver, you know, to deliver a 10 or 11 week cohort to enable young people to perform, as you say, you know, flawlessly and like professionals, takes great skill. And you can imagine that the young people aren't always in all the time. So sometimes you might have some young people in, some others. So the meticulous amount of planning, I think some people don't, I think they think they understand, but I don't think they really understand the amount of planning that goes into choreographing 8 young people for 3 pieces when their lives are so chaotic, and mm-hmm. to do it in a way where young people are able to accept their instruction. So it's that they're an incredible team. And we've got about 6 or 7 freelance dance artists that we use regularly, whose skills go beyond any teaching that I've ever experienced. And we also have, often we have a member of staff seconded from Hampshire County Council's Children's Services who come and spend a cohort with us as a bit of CPD for them, as a way of getting, you know, to work with young people directly for a little bit of time to get them out of their houses if they're still working from home. So we have an amazing commitment from Children's Services who support those secondees to come and work with us. And that's brilliant. You know, they're, again, it makes each cohort unique. And then we have a great project board who look after us and help with referrals and moving us forward. So, and we have about 25 volunteers who come in, two of them each day to help serve lunch. And they are, we call our orange box army, because they arrive in orange boxes. And they're all amazing ladies and one man who've been coming literally since we started. I think you remember them.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
From when you visited. So they were all in their 70s then, 60s and 70s, and they're all in their 80s now. And we had a new volunteer actually start this time, who came along just a couple of weeks ago, and our oldest volunteer is 85, and this new lady came in, and she's a friend, she's been to lots of performances and has wanted to get involved for a long time, and she said, oh, I'm not bad, am I, for 93. So our latest volunteer is 93.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's crazy. And much the sort of sadness to our to Joe, my dear Joe, who's our other eldest, who is now way down the league table and has a few more years to catch up. But yeah, but they are a huge support, and you know, another group of people for young people to meet who they would never normally meet in their day-to-day lives, but to sort of build relationships with, you know, older people.
And they're from the local community, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're from around Hampshire. And they travel a long way, actually, some of them. They come quite a way to come and do lunch with us. And they support us through the performances. They bring their friends. And, yeah, they're just a great, amazing, inspiring bunch of ladies and Terry.
Amazing. Yes, I do remember meeting them. They're so, yeah, I mean, everybody involved in Wessex Dance Academy is pretty brilliant. And it is a really, really lovely programme. And even though it's focused on dance, it's so much more than that, isn't it? You're not just teaching dance. It's almost like a lifestyle or a kind of a holding period, isn't it? Could you tell us a bit more about the wider stuff? You've mentioned meals and things, but could you give us a sense of what it's like, what kind of broader social things you're trying to look at?
Yeah, that's kind of you to say. Yeah, so we need young people to be able to take part, okay? So it's really important that people feel full so that people are fed. So when people arrive in the morning, we have a little breakfast station in our dining room and people have breakfast. We ask young people not to bring anything in, any food in, because we want people to, for some young people, they can't bring food in, they don't have access to money to bring anything in. So we want people to feel like we're on a level, and we try and reduce and remove any sort of judgment that can be made on each other. So it's really important that the environment feels safe, and that's not always easy to achieve right straight away, because everybody's like, who is this, what's she looking at, where am I, you know. So it's really important that we start to build quickly an environment where people feel comfortable and able to ask for help. And that might be needing clean clothes to take part in, needing fresh underwear, needing a hairbrush, needing deodorant. And all of that's done quite discreetly. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes we have to say to people, okay, we're going to smell while we dance. We're going to sweat. And that's a really good thing. So if we come up to you to suggest that you go and take a wipe and have a spray, then that's great. It's a bit like you referred to earlier in an earlier question about people don't necessarily know what's going on for these people in society, what the total lack of sort of general care is given to some of our young people. So it's a very welcoming environment. It's a very fun environment. We like to have fun. We don't take things too seriously because things are really serious. So we have to provide a space where people can feel calm and ready to learn. It's an environment where we just have to take care of these young people and each other as staff members. It's really important that we look out for each other because it's not always as easy as it sounds. You know, this can make, I understand sometimes talking about this, it makes it sound like this amazing, fun project where everybody gets on. The reality is it can be tough. These young people's lives are tricky. And what happens one day, you know, they can go home and things can change dramatically overnight. And when they return tomorrow, things can be completely different. So it's forever changing. But it's important that our consistency in there's something to eat, there's something to drink, we're going to have a hot lunch. You can choose what your lunch is from this menu. It's going to arrive. The volunteers are going to deliver it. You're going to give your stuff in and it's going to all be safe. You're not going to have your phones on you. We're going to have one little vape break, if that's what you choose to do, for 5 minutes. And then we're going to come in together and we're going to work towards, you know, to get to the end of the day. So it is about the moment. It's also about the stability that they're going to be there a long time. And it is about knowing that if they need some trackies or some leggings or a plaster or a hairbrush or an ice pack or some toast, any of those things, we make sure that those basic needs are met in order for them to be able to participate. Because if you know that you smell or you've got a hole in your leggings, you know, you're going to be really conscious of that. So it's really important that people feel that they can take part as the best person that they can be.
Yeah, it's fantastic. When we were working for you in 2013, one of the things that we were doing was measuring outcomes for the young people. So yeah, looking at their experience through this whole thing, this holding and the dance experience. And we identified these particular areas that we wanted to measure, and they incorporated, didn't they, the reoffending or not reoffending and reducing risky behavior and these kind of things. But also these more difficult to measure things such as improved relationships, self-esteem and positive mental and physical outlook. And I know that a big part of that as well is increasing independence and confidence, isn't it? Could you tell us a bit about how you particularly try and give the young people that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll just touch back on what you said about the better positive relationships with adults. That's really important, more so now than ever. The amount of professionals involved in these young people's lives costs a huge amount of money. And if young people can leave us and be able to have a relationship with those people in their lives who can make things better, then that's a real, real win. If people can go back and have a relationship with a teacher at school, that's a real win. And if they can build better relationships with their parents or their carers, that's a real win. That's really positive. Confidence comes by taking small steps to be able to do things and to get things right, and to know that it's okay if you don't get things right. But these things happen incrementally, and they happen, you know, over a period of time, which is why it's so great that we have the young people for those, you know, those 10 or 11 weeks, because we can really get to know them and we can reinforce the positive changes that they're making. We can support them in those, you know, decisions that they're making. We can, you know, we can share and reflect on their achievements, and we do so using that same tool, Marianne, of measuring those outcomes. We can still look back and say, look how far you've come. Look how, this is how you felt when you first arrived, and this is how you're feeling now. You know, and we make sure, you know, everything that we try to do is reinforcing those positive decisions that they're making and acknowledging their achievements and allowing them to understand that, you know, if we get things wrong, that's fine. We can try again. We all learn by mistakes. It's okay. The world doesn't crash down. And for some of our young people, that's really hard. But just by building those relationships with other young people, often who they would never normally have a relationship with, you know, we get a complete random mix of young people. So I think it's by doing things again and again, we begin to build our confidence in being able to talk to other people and being able to confidence that we can, you know, by getting up, we can just participate in daily life. And I think that the independent thing is really interesting. And young people have to travel to us. So for some young people, that's accompanied by an adult or within a taxi. But for the majority of young people, it means about getting public transport. So that's really huge for us. We have a young person on the co-op at the moment who's never been out of her town. And we're about 30 miles away in Winchester. And for the first time, she got on a train and she's 16. Now, how does that change your life if you've never been out of town and then all of a sudden you're able to get a train somewhere? Because you can't, if you can get a train to Winchester, you can get a train to Basingstoke or London. You know, your world all of a sudden, you know, opens up.
Yeah.
And so it's, some of these things are so simple. It's literally, it's the simple things that really make a difference to young people. It's getting it wrong and getting it right again, getting it wrong and getting it wrong and then getting it right. It's, that's resilience, you know, that's getting up in the morning, getting on a train, understanding how a train timetable works or an app works, or, you know, where the bus stop is. These things that, you know, these young people don't know any of those things. There was a young person ages ago who used to get the train in and from a short train journey. And towards the end of the project, he came in with a newspaper. And he was a lad who was a real lad's lad. And he would pick up the free newspaper on the train and would read the newspaper. You know, just those tiny little things that, you know, he would never have read a newspaper. But, you know, these things just sort of like have a really happy accident and, you know, not happy accident, that's the wrong word, but they just have this organic, you know, way of being. And each young person's journey just happens. They're doing it. They're it's upon them. But, oh, yeah, I'll never forget him coming across with his little newspaper. I wonder, does he still read it? But, yeah, just little things like that you're exposed to that are just natural things rather than being done to you. You're supporting young people to just do normal day-to-day things that, you know, increases their confidence and their, you know, and that when they've achieved what they achieve, their self-esteem is huge, and there's lots of sort of sharing feedback amongst each other, you know, together to sort of acknowledge how they feel each other's done. Lots of those are peppered in throughout the project to be able to reflect together in a positive way.
It would be great if you could just say a bit about some of your success stories, because I know you've got some famous ones and some less famous ones or whatever, but you could tell us a few success stories, can't you, from the Academy?
Yeah, we've had a few, you know, and success looks different in each person, you know. And we had a quite a famous one, not really, but we've had young people that go on and dance. We have, and we're very proud of that. It's not a program that's not its intention at all. But we have had some young men go on and have careers in dance. And we have had a young person on the last cohort previous to that, who hadn't been out of a house for 2 years and was not accessing any education, was a gorgeous girl who was really quite confident and an unusual referral, really, but was not going anywhere. And relationship with mum had completely broken down. And as it would, if you're in the same space all the time and mum's really frustrated and, you know, you're really frustrated with mum. Anyway, she came to do the project and she is amazing. She's gone on. She hadn't been to school, but was in year 11, was starting year 11. So she came to us last September and she went back to, she didn't go back to school, but she went back to a local college and sat her GCSEs and has got an apprenticeship working in a nursery. And she also met a colleague in Surrey who runs an amazing dance program, and she volunteers there. And last year she was volunteer of the year, which was a really nice way to end our year and let the volunteers know as well that we had a volunteer of the year of our own. And she's a Wessex girl, and we have a company, I should just quickly mention, we have a company of girls who have gone on and danced, and they still are around locally and they perform with us at our graduation ceremony. So she is a Wessex girl and comes back every week and, you know, is loving life. And mum is like eternally grateful for, you know, who we have, what we've managed to achieve with her. But again, it's, you know, goes back to that thing of that young person's enabled, you know, us to do that. Yeah. And just people going back to school is a really positive thing. You know, one young person who was on the last cohort, who's also become a Wessex girl, she's back at school, you know, and she hasn't been going. She's just not been going to school. and she's realised that she needs to go back to school and do that. We have a young person as well from a little while ago, it's a slightly older story, who said, I think I want to be a chartered surveyor. So I was like, well, do you know what that is? And our landlord at the time were architects. And so I said, well, I'll get them to come around and explain to you whatever it is. Anyway, she has now got a very important role at one of the local Eastleigh Borough Council in their estates department and is really quite senior. Yeah. So it's all quite random, really. We have lots of young people that keep in touch. You know, one young person from the cohort before you came, I think she was one before you. She works in a local toy shop and she pops in every week to say hello. And she's 29 now. So that's like 10 years of weekly hellos from them. So, yeah, I mean, I think the success is that they keep in touch, you know, that it's great that we know where they are and they still feel like they can come and, you know, And one young person, actually, I should mention her because she came and she has tried a couple of times and not succeeded. But she, in September, started her degree at Chichester Uni doing dance and choreography. And there's lots of young people who have gone on to forge amazing lives and, you know, for some careers. So
it was fantastic for me personally, because we obviously did the work for you in 2013. And in that, we developed these 12 outcomes, which we looked at for the whole of all of the people who'd already gone through the program, but also as part of that project, I particularly followed cohort 6, and we interviewed them at the beginning, in the middle, of the end, and I was able to see their journey personally myself through the whole program, and it was so great, and I feel a kind of particular kind of affection for that group because obviously I got to know them. And then we were really lucky because when we did a refresher with you in 2020, I got to then talk to the same young people that had been on that cohort. We were able to do that because you were still in touch with them, and that was really, really cool, not just to speak to them but just to see how even many years down the line the program had affected them. And a few of them I remember who are now mothers had credited the experience of the Wessex Dance Academy in helping them to change their offending behaviour and being mothers, and just kind of the things that they learned through the academy, and that it really helped them to feel like they had achieved something, and just this kind of experience then of taking on these extra care responsibilities as being mothers just really, really then also addedly, even greaterly helped them, you know, going forward. So that was so nice to speak to them, and it's so good that you now are still so much in touch with them. We did that research just as COVID was enveloping our lives, and it was a bit of a challenge, wasn't it? But there's been also some long-term impacts from the pandemic. I know you mentioned around children being less likely to be in school because of the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it's increased hugely since the pandemic, those young people who aren't going to school. About 1.6 million children don't go to school in our country. And that's a crazy number of young people. And the majority of those are young people who are living in poverty. You know, three times as many young people, if they're on free school meals, are missing school than those who aren't. And that's where we're at. That's what's happening nationally. And we all sit within that. And it's really hard. And we, you know, we have a young person at the moment. We have two of the young people we have at the moment. One's had 0% attendance for the last 2 years. One's had 26% attendance for the last 2 years. And both of them have come every day. They have 100% attendance for one and 99% or 98% for another. And that's great. That's really great. It's really good to be able to report that back to our project board and to say to schools, this is what's happening. How do we enable their 99% attendance at the academy? How do we make that work at school? Because otherwise, you know, for us, it's saying, well, it's fine when they're there. But actually, how can we? And we're working on it. We work with schools closely, you know. Lorna especially does a lot of work in integrating these young people back. But ultimately, it's the environment that school, that is school, that is our secondary schools, is just too overwhelming for many of our young people. And we feel that some young people are just stuck and something somewhere is quite broken. and how do we enable that huge amount of young people in our country? How do we enable them in education? And so many people are working so hard to try and make that happen, but it's a thing. Not going to school is an actual thing, and it is growing, and schools really need help. Parents need help to be able to re-engage that huge number of young people that are just missing out on education, but not just missing out on education, missing out on making friends, getting outside, you know, getting up, living a life, building relationships, all of those things that being a child, you know, should have.
Yeah, because of course that was a massive time, well, a really long period of time, and that must have had so much of an effect on people. I mean, it had so much effect on people for sure. But then, yeah, this long-term impact that children just aren't going to school, I had no idea that it was so prevalent, and that there was such a large tranche of young people who were just kind of dropped off now.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of young people that have dropped off, and a huge amount of desperate parents, and you know, and schools, you know, they're doing so much work to try and get them in, but you know, it's had such an impact. And when will we see, what impact will we see, and when will we see it on that cohort of young people who, you know, who experience where in their education they experience that 2 years gap, and how that's gone forward and moved forward, and what does that look like, you know, beyond the next 10 years, you know, and a lot of young people are also, I should say, you know, on the plus side, resilient. There's been an amazing amount of resilience shown by young people through that, you know, as well as those young people who aren't going to school. The resilience must be acknowledged about for those young people who have, you know, they are young people by nature are pretty resilient characters. And you know, it's something we will see, I'm sure, unfold going forward. But yeah, it's a lot of young people, right?
Yeah, it's really worrying. I mean, it's strange because I guess so often, or in historically, it's been very much about schools excluding the young people, but now it seems that they're not even getting into the school in the first place in order to be excluded, but it's just this horrible, yeah, big gap. Are there other challenges that you're facing at the moment? What would you say are your main challenges?
I think we're a non-statutory organisation within a local government, you know, and I think that what's hard is, you know, you sort of alluded to earlier around the evidence and what our headlines are and what we can prove is that, you know, we do cost money, and we do, you know, we can't always really clearly demonstrate, you know, those real cost savings that we know we make, and, you know, and people know that we make them, but it's really hard to solidly claim that costings are, you know, being made. The arts are crucial to the development of society and our young people, and they need access to it. And yes, we just provide a dance thing, but we are providing an arts program, and access to one art form will surely lead on to access to others, and the confidence to feel that the arts are for them. It's something that they can participate in. It is not for, you know, their posh person down the road, or, you know, the person that lives around the corner that's got a piano. It's for them, you know, and it can make a difference. And that if they can articulate how that's made a difference, then that's brilliant. Let's build a group of young people that understand the importance of the arts and the importance of structure and love and food on their futures.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. And what is so dispiriting, as somebody also who very much supports and believes in the importance of the arts, is, you know, there's been a many, many years where arts have been devalued within government and defunded, and there's much, much less funding for all sorts of arts. And yes, this idea that kind of the economic cost is more important to prove, or that, you know, some of these other outcomes are more important, but really, you know, the arts is, it gives our life meaning, doesn't it, and beauty and purpose, and we can't really forget these things that are less easily quantifiable just because they're less easily quantifiable. Obviously, we have worked with you and we have quantified them to a certain extent, but it feels a bit annoying that we have to prove that, you know, when you can see how great something is and how it's improving people's lives, and that should be enough.
Yeah.
I guess as we draw to a close, I just wanted to highlight how the program, how you mentioned the program, it culminates in this final performance. And I remember going to them and really, really being impressed. And it would be great just to, if you could just tell a bit about these final performances and how the community reacts to them, because they're obviously performed and you can buy tickets to them, can't you? They're kind of proper events.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a proper event. And yeah, so the final performance is at our theatre, local theatre, at The Point in Eastleigh, our dance theatre. And yeah, and we sell tickets. It's in the programme. And we may have 8 in a cohort. And those 8 young people aren't going to, by any means, get an audience of 300 or 200 people. So we've built up quite a following over the years where lots of people come and enjoy an hour of inspirational dance and film. We make a film that's shown on the evening that charts the journey of the young people. And it's really important for the audience, for them to be introduced to the audience and for the audience to meet, albeit on screen, the young people when they first came to us. And then the second part of the film is how they are just prior to a week or a few days just before the performance. So you see immediately these young people, and you see them when they started with us, and you see them as they're finishing with us before you then see what they've actually gone on to achieve. It's a really special evening, and you physically see the difference in these young people within the film, and they're almost unrecognizable when they come out on stage because they are themselves on the film. But we pay a lot of attention and make a lot of care to their appearance and how they're dressed and how their hair is, and they look like a young company of, they look like Hampshire Youth Dance Company. I hope Hampshire Youth Dance Company don't mind me saying that. They look like they've danced together for a long time, and they come out and they perform 3 pieces. The first piece is usually the piece that's a bit more advanced. They then perform the piece that they've made themselves, and the evening comes to a crescendo in the 20-minute piece that they've learnt from the very beginning, which they've gone back and performed. And you know, I'll just speak of our last performance, which happened just before Christmas, and it was just amazing that the young people had a really, really challenging piece of choreography to learn and to perform, and it had silk things flying around, and there was, it was just crazy good. And it ended with them throwing up something into the air and falling to the floor in a massive crescendo. And as they did it was complete blackout. And there was about 240 people there, I think. Everybody took to the floor and gave a huge standing ovation to them. And it was just, it's so powerful, that mix of, like, there's 8 of them on stage, on a huge stage. There's not 20 of them, they're 8 and they're owning it. And their faces and the emotion at the end is just awe-inspiring. And there's rarely a dry eye in the house. And we had a VIP at the last one who said he'd been warned to bring some tissues, and he was glad that he did. So yeah, so they own it. And as they do their journey, they own their journey, and they own that last night with us on stage. And they then get announced into the auditorium when they're again yet unrecognisable without their costumes on. But it's a wonderful experience, and it's great for them to really feel, not just on stage, the appreciation of the audience, but when they come off stage and they enter the foyer and everybody's cheering for them and they are who they are, and they go from being themselves on the film to a dancer in a company to being themselves greeted by the people that are there to support them. And it's lovely, and we're all usually really tired by then. We all still appreciate it hugely, and always completely chuffed with what they've done.
Yeah, it's definitely amazing. I remember being so, yeah, in awe and proud and yeah, overwhelmed by how beautiful it is. It is a very, very cool end thing to do. And the whole project is awesome. I really, really love it. And I'm glad that you've been able to keep going for 15 years. And I do hope that there'll be 15 at least more. And you definitely deserve a massive pat on the back, you and Lorna and everybody that works there, for all of the work that you put into it and all of the passion you put into it and the care you put into it and how you hold those young people, because it's not easy, but you do it with grace. And so, yeah, I'm very much impressed by it and you, and well done. And I hope you can get a good amount of appreciation for that.
Well, please don't underestimate the work that Justice Studio did to get us there, because without all of your reports and all of that evidence, then, you know, we wouldn't be here. I'm 100% certain that the work that you did, the early work, and especially the work you've done sort of pre-pandemic or on the pandemic, has just been so useful, and it's just helped us convince those decision makers that it is worth continuing investment in. So thank you, Marianne, and your team.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really good to hear. So for people that want to find out more about the Wessex Dance Academy and you, how can they do that? How can they follow you?
They can follow us on Instagram at Wessex Dance Academy. It's probably the best place. Our most up-to-date social is Instagram. Yeah, I'd say that. All of the dates of our performances will be up there. They can look back at previous stories, see some of the young people, and get in touch if they wish.
Amazing. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Claire, for being on the podcast. It's been really lovely to see you and speak to you again.
Thank you for having me, Marianne.
Thank you for listening to Justice Studio Sessions. We have so enjoyed deep diving into social justice with you. Justice Studio provides compassionate consultancy rooted in social justice. If you would like to work with us, please visit our website at www.justicestudio.org or email us at info@justicestudio.org. This podcast relies on your support. If you love our content and would like to see this podcast reach more people, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating or leave us a lovely review. We would be delighted for you to share your thoughts, musings, or favourite parts of the podcast with us on social media. You can tag and or follow Marianne at creatrix.london and Justice Studio at Justice Studio on all the major social sites. This podcast was hosted by Marianne Moore and produced by Justice Studio Limited. The music was by Luke Fraser at The Tonic, and the artwork was by Marianne. Thank you so much for listening.